Good Wednesday afternoon, 91.9 FM listeners. You're tuned, as I've just mentioned, to 91.9 FM, the home of unpredictable music, and the Indy's Trusted Servant Show. And this is the Indy's Trusted Servant Show with yours truly, Danny O'Malley, Indy's Trusted Servant. What is Indy's Trusted Servant? Well, I do customer service training and keynote speaking about customer service, and it's all about the culture of the organization. I learned all of that from the hand of the master, my late father, Joe O'Malley, both at Preston Supermarket at 71st and Keystone from 1962 to 1965, and then at O'Malley Food Markets for the rest of my life through 1966. What is the Indy's Trusted Servant? Oh, if you're interested in learning more about my customer service keynotes and trainings, give me a call at 317-413-9062. What's the Indy's Trusted Servant Show? I like to describe it as lively local small biz and community talk where you can feel the pulse of Indy. And today, I think I've got a really interesting guest. It's a name some of you might be familiar with through his career, long career with the Indiana State Police, David Burston. And David retired after a long career as head of the Indiana State Police, correct?
Well, no, not that. Not I didn't quite. Have that title. I wasn't the head. I don't want to get Superintendent Doug Carter upset with
oh,
me.
Oh, that would be I was Doug the Carter. Head. You were head of communications.
Chief Public Information Officer.
Chief Public Information Officer. And like some of my prior guests, like Jim McClellan, who went from Goodwill Industries to being the governor's anti-opioid guy, David, like Jim McClellan, flunked retirement and is now the communications director of all places, Indiana State Prisons. Right, Dave?
Indiana Department of Correction.
There you go. So tell us about yourself before we get into the ifs, ands, and buts of the Indiana State Prisons, okay?
Well, I'll give you, excuse me, I'm all of a sudden got froggy in my throat. Excuse me. My law enforcement career started as a military police officer back in 1977, and I was at the 4th Military Police Company.
And where was that?
That was in Fort Carson, Colorado.
Okay.
And I had several assignments moving around and never did go overseas, interestingly enough. I thought that would happen, but it's always luck of the draw. And this was, my service was during Cold War time. So I finished.
Well, for our young listeners, can you describe the years of that service?
Sure. The years of that service was 1977 to 1980.
Okay.
And it was after I came out of the Army in April of 80. I took an early out because I had saved up all my vacation time. And I actually started the State Police Academy while I was still technically in the Army. So I started
the Indiana State Police Academy?
Indiana State Police Academy.
And are
March.
You a Hoosier native?
No, our family moved here in 1969. My father, a name that may be familiar to you, Jesse Cox.
Jesse Cox. Why would that be familiar?
Arrow Drapery, Coxall Gardens.
Okay.
Up in Carmel.
Arrow Drapery. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
got it.
And my father had a business idea that Mr. Cox believed in, but we were from Kansas City, Kansas. And Mr. Cox said, my father's name is Steve. Steve, I like your idea, but I like when I put money into something, I like to see it. So you're going to have to move here and make your idea work in Indianapolis.
Okay.
So Dad packed up the family. And
and you were how old at the time?
I was 9 years old.
Okay.
9 or 10.
Okay.
I think I was 10 years old when we moved here in 1969.
So you were working for the Colts or the Chiefs?
I'm a Colts fan.
Okay, good boy.
Colts fan. Yeah. So was a Chiefs fan back then. Have
sure.
An autographed picture from Len Dawson.
Len Dawson, yeah, Purdue University.
Yeah, probably a lot of people have to search way back in their memory banks to pull that name up.
Yeah.
So I finished the State Police Academy in July of 80 and was appointed. My first few years of service were in the Indianapolis district. Then I sought for and obtained a position on the late Governor Orr's security staff. So I was part of his security
detail.
All
right, interesting.
Like anything else in life, law enforcement then, and it still doesn't pay great now, but it paid even less great back then.
I take it, that's true.
And it was funny because when I came out of the Army, I was making $6,000 a year. And my first full year on the state police, which would have been in 1981, I made $12,000 and thought I was in hog heaven.
That would be more then, so, wouldn't it? Yeah,
that so I doubled my income, but when you think about $12,000, you think about that today.
But think about it in 1980, it's not so bad.
It was better.
Yeah,
it was better than what I make that that pathway upward. But I became disenchanted with the salary, and my father had asked me to work for his company a number of times, decorating den systems.
Okay.
You remember decorating den?
I do remember that. Yes.
So that was the money that Jesse Cox fronted to my father to start that business, and became an international business. So I worked.
So did you go to Carmel High School or?
Went to North Central.
North Central High School.
Yeah.
Okay.
Graduated there midterm in early 1977, right before I went into the service.
Okay. Gotcha.
So it was at that time that I resigned. I went to work for my father's company. I missed law enforcement. And I thought, well, since I left because of the money, where do they pay police officers really, really good? And I found myself in Santa Monica, California.
Oh, no kidding.
And I was a city police officer there for 2 years. And that was 1985 to 1987.
Okay.
As the saying goes, home is where the heart is. And I missed Indiana, missed my friends, missed the lifestyle, all the things. What I explained to people, Santa Monica, good police department, good people. I liked the people I worked with, but it wasn't the America I grew up in.
I'm sure it wasn't.
and so I decided to come back. And the funny thing is now when I came back, I reinstated in 1988. John Shuttle was the superintendent.
Okay.
He had been the superintendent. Larry Furness was the superintendent. Larry Furness reinstated me, and I came back to work. And one of the first questions I would be asked by people, these are seasoned police officers. Seasoned police officers would ask me what being a police officer in Santa Monica was like. And I said, well, I said, you know, we had some gang issues, but in Santa Monica, our gangs were kind of wimpy. We only had a drive-by shooting every couple of weeks. Do you know what seasoned police officers asked me when I said that?
No idea.
What's a drive-by shooting?
In 1988.
1988, yeah. Drive-by shootings were virtually unheard of. Everybody here knows what a drive-by shooting is now,
yeah,
unfortunately,
sure do,
sadly.
Yeah.
And you see the gang issues that developed, and I talked about gangs being in Indianapolis, and again, seasoned police officers saying, well, we don't have a gang problem. I said, let me come show you this graffiti. And I said, I'm not an expert on it, but I'll translate some of it. And I said, these are the different gangs that are here.
Yeah.
You've got a gang problem.
And this was in 88.
Yeah, this was in 88.
Yeah.
And nobody today of sound mind would deny that there's a gang problem
certainly
here
not.
In Indianapolis.
Certainly not.
But I went back to work in 88. I worked the downtown interstate a little bit more. I worked on the north side. I went into the training division as a sergeant. And I had an opportunity to promote to first sergeant or to put in for the public information officer position at the Indianapolis Post. I put in for both positions. They came open at the same time. But the public information position is a trooper's position. So I made an appointment with the superintendent, who was then a man by the name of Lloyd Jenkins. Lloyd Jennings. Memory starts to fail.
It sure does.
Lloyd Jennings. And I met with Lloyd, Superintendent Jennings, and I told him, Superintendent, I put in for both these positions. I said, I want you to know if I'm qualified for one or both of them, my preference would be to the public information officer. And he said, well, Dave, I'm glad you told me that because I'd have probably put you in for the one that was a promotion, training division from sergeant to first sergeant. It is if you want to be the PIO, I'll keep that in mind, but you know you'll be reduced in rank to trooper for a year, and if you do a good job, you'll be promoted back to sergeant.
Okay.
And
took the gamble.
Yeah, so I took the gamble, and about a week later, I just got a notice, and then this is before email, I just got a notice that said you have been voluntarily reduced in rank from sergeant to trooper and reassigned to serve as the public information officer for the Indianapolis Post. So I reported out there and started working as the PIO. I was trained by a gentleman of the name of Sergeant John Wheeler, who's long since retired, and I'm still in touch with. And he helped me get started, and I really haven't looked back from there. Went from trooper to sergeant, to first sergeant in 1998.
All is information.
All in public information.
Yeah.
And in 2011, I was appointed as captain, chief public information officer by Dr. Paul Weitzel, who was then the superintendent of the state police.
And when I bumped into you fairly recently, I remembered your name from your days as the information officer because you would often be on television or whatever, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. But you retired when?
I retired June 14th, hung up my gun belt on a Friday. This June 14th,
right.
I took a long 48 hours off, and then I reported to work at the Department of Correction on June 17th.
Okay, we're going to come back to that point after this underwriter break. Okay.
Got to pay the bills.
Yeah, we got to pay the bills. So we want to thank our underwriters and our host, and we want to tell you about next week's show as well. Underwriters for the Indy's Trusted Servant Show on 91.9 FM, WITTR, number one. Fabric Care Dry Cleaner at 5760 West Morris Street at West Washington Street out by the old airport. They are specialists in all sorts of dry cleaning. They have a laundromat on site that's open from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. They do pickup and home delivery twice a week in the metro area, and their phone number is 241-1288. That's 241-1288. You can find out more about my good friend James Belt and the other good folks at Fabric Care on Facebook. Second underwriter is my alma mater, Cathedral High School, at 5225 East 56th Street at the intersection of 56th and Fall Creek Parkway. We Cathedral High School, will hold its open house on November 14th. If you have a son or daughter in the 5th to the 8th grade, come to the open house on November 14th from 5:30 to 8. Tour the beautiful 40-acre college atmosphere campus led by some of our students. Meet some of the faculty and staff that have kept Cathedral an educational leader in Indianapolis for 101 years now. That's November 14th from 5:30 to 8 p.m., 5225 East 56th Street. Go Irish. And next week's guest will be longtime friend and longtime Indiana High School athletic director at Brebeuf, Lawrence Central, and Greenfield Central, and currently the operations director of the Indiana State basketball finals at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, Kevin Horrigan. And we're going to talk about high school sports today versus high school sports then. A very enlightening conversation, I'm sure. Now, back to David Burstyn. And I forgot to cover your family, David. Tell us real quickly about your family.
Well, my beautiful bride is Beatrice. She has been my bride for 25 and a half years.
Congrats.
Yeah, she made me court her for 4 and a half and turned me down until the third time I asked her. So,
I only got to ask my wife twice.
Yeah, so, you know, the strange things we'll do for the woman we love.
Yes.
And so she kept me on the hook, but been a great ride. I have one son. His name is Conrad, and I always point that out, Conrad with a K.
Oh, the K. Okay.
And he is in his junior year at the great Purdue University, where
Boiler up.
My man Mitch Daniels is president there. I think most people know.
Bang up.
Oh, great job! And it was my honor to serve on the state police in my capacity with him. And I'm going to jump back a little bit.
Everybody knows who Mitch Daniels is. So fire up.
Probably one of the more significant events that happened to me as a chief public information officer for the state police was that horrible stage collapse at the state fair.
Oh, God.
That was in 2011.
Yep.
And August, and it was just a horrible event. Immediately when the stage first collapsed, four people lost their lives.
Right.
Over the next couple of days, three more people passed away.
Right.
So it was horrendous. And, you know, my son, so that was 8 years ago. So then he was 12 years old, and we were watching the coverage afterward, and there was some coverage of myself. I led all of the media contact with that for the state fair.
You were on a lot then.
Not for anything good.
No.
And the governor and I were sharing the podium, and it was my honor under those circumstances. It was still a privilege to introduce him as he came to share the information that he had.
Was this at the fairgrounds?
This was afterwards. At the fairgrounds. Yes. This was afterwards. Yep. This is in the Farm Bureau building is where that
where
news
you
conference
did this.
Was held. Yes.
You know, interestingly, my wife and I were having dinner at Marco's that night at 54th okay. and Keystone. We were just leaving Marco's when I never saw so many cop cars and fire engines and everything. I said, something bad has happened, you know.
Well,
wow.
And on that note, you reminded me of something else of significance. When I got the call, it was shortly after. It was 9:06 in the evening. My son and I were sitting in the man cave in the basement of the home, and we were getting ready to watch a movie together. And the phone rang, caller ID, Indiana State Police. And I said, well, this isn't going to be good, not having
not
any
at
idea
nine
what,
on a Saturday.
What had happened.
Yeah.
What I was told, Dan, is I was told the grandstands had collapsed.
Oh, wow.
Now, the grandstands hold over 13,000 people.
Right,
and immediately, I started thinking to myself, we're going to have dozens, if not hundreds of fatalities. And I was thinking back to
the Coliseum explosion, 1963.
You read my mind.
Yep.
And I'm thinking about other people I need to call. I made several phone calls to get other assistance. I knew I was going to need help. And as I started driving there, the one thing that was foremost in my mind, don't be in such a hurry that I crash. And then
that couldn't have helped.
No, that's not going to help. And then people got to clean up my mess, and there's still work to be done there at the fairgrounds. I got to the fairgrounds, parked my car, and I look, and I say,
there's
well, the
grandstands
are there.
Thank God.
And I went up to a trooper that I knew and trusted, and I said, I was told that the grandstands collapsed. Well, what's happening? He says, no, it's the stage where there was a musical group that was getting ready to come on.
Nickel Plate.
It wasn't Nickel Plate. It was Nettle.
I thought it was.
No, it wasn't. It was, oh, gosh, help
me
out.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
But it was a significant group.
You'll come up with it.
As they were preparing to come on, the winds came and collapsed that stage in front of the grandstands. And I have a hard time explaining this to people because, as I said before, well, I was relieved.
Yes,
you know, four people died that night. Seven people lost their lives. But when I learned about the four people that had been killed, I felt about for them, for their families. But I thought to myself, okay, I've gone from thinking what was going to be a mass casualty of hundreds, perhaps killed,
perhaps.
And thousands more injured to some extent or another. Okay, this is manageable. Still tragic.
Very tragic. So,
but my son commented to me as I was standing there with the governor. He says, Dad, the governor looks like he wants you to stop talking.
Well, he's a politician after
all.
No,
it was more the gravity of everything. I have the utmost and continue to have the utmost respect for Mitch Daniels. And
he's
a fine man.
He was a very, very good governor. Very, very good governor. And I think he's a great president of Purdue University.
Yeah.
So that's great. Now let's get on to your current position. You said
certainly.
you were retired for a weekend, so you already had the job lined up with the prison system.
I knew the person, the two people before me that had the position, and he had suggested to me that I consider doing it a year earlier. But there were some, long story short, there were some changes in the salary and that was going to significantly affect my retirement.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't the right time to leave.
But it was still open for you.
It was open by circumstances a year later. And, God has a plan. Sometimes you don't understand the plan.
Tell me about it.
But I thank God every day that the opportunity presented itself. I competed against four other worthy people and was fortunate to have the offer tendered to me and then accepted it.
Well, I'm sure your prior experience, plus no doubt the relationship you had with the prison system, had a lot to do with that. And I'm sure they picked the best person for the job.
Well, I'd like to think that's the case, and I'm grateful to be there.
Well, we're going to come back with David Burstyn, the new communications director for the Indiana Department of Corrections, that is the prison system, after this underwriter break, and also talk about next week's show. So the underwriters for the show on 91.9 FM at 4:30 on Wednesdays are Fabric Care Dry Cleaning Center at 5760 West Morris Street at West Washington Street out by the old airport. Specialists in all sorts of dry cleaning. Laundromat opens 7 days a week on site from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. They do pickup and home delivery twice a week in the metro area. Their phone number is 241-1288. That's 241-1288. And to find out more about my good friend James Belt and the rest of the good folks at Fabricare, you can go to Facebook. Second underwriter is my alma mater, Cathedral High School at 5225 East 56th Street. On November 14th, Cathedral holds annual open house from 5:30 to 8 p.m. for prospective students. If you have a boy or a girl in the 5th through the 8th grade, Cathedral would love to see you that night. You'll be able to tour the beautiful small college atmosphere, 40-acre campus, and be toured around by one of the current students at Cathedral or more. You'll meet a lot of the faculty and staff that are the reason why Cathedral has been an educational leader in Indianapolis since 1918. Once again, 5225 East 56th Street. If you have questions, call 542-1481. That's 542-1481. Go Irish. Next week's guest will be my longtime friend Kevin Horrigan, a high school educator and athletic director at, five different schools, St. Andrew's School, Chittard High School, Brebeuf, Lawrence Central, and Greenfield, and he was the athletic director at those last three schools for, gosh, I don't know how many years. He now is the CEO, I guess, chief operating officer of the Indiana State basketball finals at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and we're going to talk about how high school sports are in some ways better, but in some ways worse than they used to be in the old days. Not only high school sports, but just sports for kids in general. We'll look forward to that. Now, back to David Burston, who is the new communications director for the Indiana Department of Corrections. Tell us about that, and tell us about how many facilities there are and how many inmates there are and anything else you can talk about.
Certainly. But it's come to me through help through here in your studio. It was the Sugarland Band.
Sugarland,
Jennifer Nettles.
Son of a gun.
So that's
okay.
Who was
I knew it would hit you.
Yeah, well, a little help.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
But to your question, a lot of people think, and I'm going to monologue a little bit here, if that's okay with you, because when we talk about the Department of Correction, most people think, okay, that's where all the people go to prison. They're kept there, lock them up, throw away the key. You know, they shouldn't be part of society. And what the first thing I tell people now, as I've continued to learn things, and I've got a total different perspective since coming to work for the Department of Correction. First of all, 90% of the people that are serving there, serving time, they're going to get out.
Sure.
So now the question is, when they get out, are they going to be a better citizen or a better criminal? And the idea is to have programming, what's called programming there, and I'll use a different word for programming, training and skills and things that are like culinary or computer operation, a program that's called The Last Mile, which teaches computer programming.
And I noticed a couple more, welding,
yes,
automotive. These are good jobs.
These are jobs,
right,
that you can make $70,000, $80,000, $90,000,
$100,000
a year for people that are skilled in it. So there's a lot of training that's happening there, and that training is happening all across the state. There are 21 prison facilities all across Indiana.
That's something I never would have. I would have guessed 10 or 12 max, but you don't know. I notice also that, what are the breakdown of men and women there?
We've got 18 facilities that are housing men. We've got three that are housing juveniles. So this is females and boys, so they're separate. And then there is the women's prison. So
the one women's prison?
There's a women's prison on the west side of Indianapolis.
Right.
And then also down in Madison, Indiana, there's another facility.
Women's prisons.
So two.
So the vast majority of these inmates are male,
yes,
right?
The majority are.
How many of them are under 18?
Percentage? Well, the people that are under 18 would be your juveniles.
The juveniles.
And I don't have those hard numbers right at my fingertips, but that accounts for less than a couple hundred. So the total prison population is in the area of north of 26,000 people.
So over 95% are adults.
Yes.
Over 18.
Yes.
Right? Now, how many of these Are there any maximum security prisons?
When you think of the maximum security, what, the easiest way to reference that is the Indiana State Prison up in Michigan City.
Michigan City, yeah.
And another very maximum security type location is in Miami, Miami, Indiana, the Miami prison facility, which is in Peru.
Peru,
and
okay.
And then there's also the Pendleton Reformatory.
Is that a maximum security?
It is. It is a very, very secure facility.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So. I always thought of Pendleton as maybe being a softer.
Well, there's multiple locations there. You have a juvenile facility there. There's several things.
Okay.
At Pendleton.
Okay.
The correctional industrial facility, which is not a maximum level. And what people think of with Pendleton, and its name has changed, the Indiana Reformatory. So that's the Pendleton Correctional Facility.
Okay. It's called Indiana Reformatory. What's the thing in Plainfield?
We have the in Plainfield, you have the Plainfield Correctional Facility. There's also the Reception Diagnostic Center, which is where everybody that comes into the Department of Correction, that's their in-processing point.
That's like the Ellis Island of the Indiana prison system, kind of?
I wouldn't give it that notorious name, but okay. I would tell you it's where you start, where you're classified, you're reviewed to see what's your education level, do you have any medical issues, where is the facility that is most appropriate for you to go.
That's where they pick the facility they're going to send you to. And so, the other thing, is that the same as the boys' school, Plainfield, Carlton, or is that the same thing?
Well, the boys' school that was the boys' school is now a correctional facility.
It is.
So
okay.
you have the Pendleton Juvenile Facility is where juveniles are, boys.
Okay.
And the girls are located up at LaPorte Juvenile Facility.
Okay.
In LaPorte, Indiana.
And just for make sure that I've got this straight, the stuff that's in Indianapolis, like the county and city jail or the juvenile center at 25th and Keystone,
totally
that's
separate.
That's Marion County.
That's part
stuff.
Of Marion County,
right.
Correct.
Okay.
And there used to be there was a women's prison downtown Indianapolis.
Yeah, by Tech High School,
yeah,
right?
But that's was moved out to the Indiana Women's Prison, which is in
West Side.
It's in Hendricks County.
What's going on in that facility now, or do you know even? Women's prison on Michigan, is it? It's a big facility.
It's not being used as, it's not housing any offenders.
Any prisoners. Yeah. So let's go back to, you really want to emphasize the fact that the rehabilitative aspects of these things.
Yes.
I've got a friend who teaches bridge at Putnamville.
Okay.
Okay. Teaches people how to play bridge at Putnamville. Now, that's not the same as learning to be a welder or work on a car or becoming a, you know,
building trades.
Yeah, or whatever, or even a barber or cosmetologist, yeah. But you have a lot of that kind of socialization stuff going on in these places, right?
Well, there's people that play in bands and musical therapy. So there's that kind of thing. Anything that helps increase a person's opportunity to be more social and to be able to control their emotions and their feelings. One of the biggest deficits, not just in Indiana, but across the country, is lack of good mental health treatment.
Oh, yeah.
And by default, whether it's a county jail or if it's a state prison facility, by default, those have become our mental health facilities.
Yeah.
And prisons were not designed for mental health.
Right. Interestingly enough, last week's show was a mental health counseling organization in Zionsville and Westfield. So this is good follow-up on that, right? What would you say, we've got just a minute or so left, do you know what the recidivism rate is in the Indiana State Prison? Has it gone up or down?
This is a ballpark area. It's in the mid-30s, about 33-34%. That's an approximation, so
okay.
if I'm off
One
a percent
three.
Or two. And that compares in other parts of the nation of 50, 60, and 70%.
We're doing better then.
We are doing significantly better. So for every 100 people that are released, we're only having 33 or 34 of them come back over a 3-year period.
Well, there's something to be said. We must be making some progress there. Obviously, you'd like to have that even lower, right?
And that's where the good training is. The biggest, we have a hire program, and it's an initiative that gets people employed. As we see people, we know when somebody's going to get out. and we work to get them employment. The goal is that you walk out of the prison facility where
and
you
have
were
a job.
And the next day you're able to start a job. Kind of like when I retired from the state police, the next day I had some place to go to.
David Burston, Communications Director, Indiana System of Corrections Facilities. Thanks for being our guest today.
It was a pleasure.
It went awfully fast. We would like to thank and recognize the producer of today's show, Pace Whitecamp, of the DJ Lucky Menace Show, a collection of wonderful music to end your day, which is directly after this show. And don't forget tonight at 6 o'clock, Indiana Nocturne with Russ Dodge and Devin Dean, unpredictable music from the 60s through 2000. Next week, Athletic Director par excellence Kevin Horrigan. Thanks for listening to the Indy's Trusted Servant Show.